Gregoire and Dan Beeston are smart enough to know better.
Welcome to episode 211 of Smart Enough to Know Better.
We're a podcast of science.
And comedy.
And ignorance.
I'm Dan Beeston.
And I'm Gregoire.
And in this episode, it's time to stop the bloodshed.
And we'll prove that we're your best friends.
And it's time to stop the blood nuts.
And if you liked it, you should have put a sphere on it. But before all that, Dan, how was your week in science?
It's getting colder here in subtropical Brisbane in late May.
Mm-hmm.
This means I have to switch to my heavier t-shirts to remain comfortable. And another thing I've done is get better windows.
Ooh.
Our windows now seal out the air and sound from outside.
But now they finally also let in light, not just a wall.
This window broken.
I can't see it. It's the wall, Dan.
Ah! Oh, found window. Okay. I sleep with the door shut. And
honestly, you have to, otherwise murderers get in. That's a simple. You're wondering why there's so many people getting murdered because they're sleeping with their doors open.
I mean, I don't have murderers in the rest of the house. What sort of people are in the rest of your house?
Well, they break in, but they can't get through the bedroom door. That's the rules. Monsters can't take off the bedspread, and murderers can't come through your door. This is rules, Dan. These are the rules.
There would be this great horror film about someone who was like doing reckless engineering and spliced a monster with something that could take doonas off.
Yes, a robot. Basically, it's a spliced monster with a machine that can remove bedspreads.
Or they uplift a monster and it's like the doona comes off. There's a person underneath it.
Oh, this is like having a profiterole. Yum, 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 yum. I love the idea that it's really slow. The monster's like, I've learned how to do it. I lift. There's three dimensions for doonas. And you're just lying in bed going, it's taking a very long time.
It's got some sort of tactile problem where it doesn't like to touch soft stuff.
Yes.
It's like, no, this isn't right. This is like the outside of a duck inside a duck.
Oh, it's like it's touching. Yeah, it's like, oh, it's also soft and lovely. And, oh, God, and finally gets it off. And the person underneath has grabbed another sheet and pulled it over. They go, oh, come on.
Standing there going, think spiky thoughts. Think spiky thoughts. Think gooey spiky thoughts.
The person in the bed trying to quietly reach out to another blanket they got under their bed quickly, and in the end they can't reach it. Like, oh, they can't reach it, and then suddenly a voice goes, "I've got your back, man." You know, grabs your hand. The thing under the bed grabs your hand and passes you a doona. And it's like, okay, thanks. They go, "Don't worry, I'm gonna eat you later." Oh shit!
I'm playing the long game.
I am. Yeah, I'm the thing under your bed's your friend. Here's a doona. Yeah. You should come under the bed sometime.
I quite like the notion that there is a monster under the bed. And it's like, I'll just store the doona under the bed. It's like, it's just screaming from under the bed. No, God, no.
In my mind, it's a different monster. It has different rules. It's like, I like to grab your ankles. That's all I want. Just let me. Hey, buddy, you look like you're in trouble. How about I'll pass you the doona that's under here? If you just come on, let me touch your ankles. Come on, man.
So in our incredible action horror film, the way that the main character finally kills the monster is just throwing the doona over the top of the monster, and it's like trapped underneath forever.
You can. But also, they make a suit of armor out of quilts. They get the quilting club to make a quilt doona armor, and they go. And now it's the little girl is like, now it's my turn to kick ass. It's like, no, the monster gets like ripped to pieces, and then the final shot is her looking triumphant in a doona armor, and then going, huh, and looking down, and this is a weird monster hand around her ankle going, teamwork makes the dream work. creepy bed monster. Sorry, just the monster under the bed. I just like the idea. I'm very stuck in the monster under the bed now, just being a hand,
just all hands.
All right, no one steal this. This is a great idea. Damn it, no one steal this. Damn it.
People tuned out real early this episode.
Wait, do we have a we're doing a podcast about science and comedy and ignorance. Not about great movie writing. We throw that in for free.
I sleep with the door shut, and I wondered what sort of buildup of CO2 occurs during the night and if that's a problem. So outdoors CO2 is about 280 parts per million. No, hang on, wait. 350 parts per... No, sorry, wait. 382 and a half. That's weird. At any rate, it's quite low. At any rate, we can comfortably breathe. In fact, it's only when it reaches about 1,000 parts per million that our mental acuity gets affected at all.
And we won't hit that for at least 50 years.
Not outside.
We're fine.
Not outside.
We're fine.
Now, indoors is a different story. More and more houses these days have aircon installed, which is weird because it's not like the outdoors is steadily getting hotter and hotter or anything. But this means people are opening their windows less. CO2 builds up inside homes, and 700 parts per million is not uncommon if someone sleeps with the door open.
Ooh.
The gas gently swirls around the house, but if you close your door, that level climbs to 1,100 parts per million.
Wow.
So when I wake up in the morning, I can be at risk of drowsiness, restlessness, headaches, and difficulty concentrating. So that's
going to be very hard to tell from your usual waking up stuff after drinking or just waking up and being middle-aged man. This is going to be very hard to tell.
No, the whole point is that if you're getting fresh air as a middle-aged man, you're still jumping out of bed, so spry and cognizant.
Oh, my God. Can I just point out, in all seriousness, this is one of the things I do. I find it very... And I don't know if this is scientifically accurate. Welcome to our podcast about science. But I don't like it on long drives when people put the recirculating thing on. I always press the fresh air thing on for this exact reason. I'm driving a high-speed vehicle, a 2-ton or 1-ton lump of metal at speeds that my monkey reactions can just handle, you know, as long as nothing goes wrong. And then we put on the, you know, recycling air thing so we can keep it warmer inside if it's a cold day or if it's just on. And I always think to myself, if it's recycling, is the carbon dioxide recycling? Is it going up? And I should have probably looked into this, but I never have. But part of me is like, I'm just going to have fresh air come in, and therefore at least it's just going to be the outside air flooding the whole thing. I don't like it on.
I was thinking of buying a CO2 measuring device. You can get it for like $25.
Science.
It might be worthwhile doing some little experiments.
Oh, what? Okay, hang on. All right, fine. I'll do some science.
All right, but it seems like a no-brainer, right? Keep the window cracked or leave the door open. Except, Gregoire, on top of your monster's problem, there is also a perfect sleep temperature.
Mm.
And with fresh air, mostly comes cold air or hot air. So you want your bedroom to be about 64 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about 18 degrees Celsius.
Oh, okay. That makes sense, actually.
And when you get old, you want that to be a little warmer. You want it to be about 73 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about 23 degrees Celsius or 296 Kelvins.
All those Kelvin, not Kelvins.
Kelvins.
Not
Kelvin. We established this last week. So you want your room to be the right temperature, but you want fresh air as well. What you really want to do is shut the windows and doors, but replace the air with the perfect temperature air. But you don't want to waste all that lovely heat.
Yes.
So what you could do is you could use a heat pump. It takes cold or hot air from outside and runs it through a bunch of hoses underground so it normalizes the temperature of it for free. And then you take your hot CO2 heavy air and you compress it, and that makes it really hot. And you take your fresh clean air and you decompress it, so that makes it really cold. And then you put them next to each other. So the old air is really hot and the fresh air is really cold, and the temperatures equalize. And then the old air decompresses to normal and is cold and gets pumped out of the house where it's cold. And the new air compresses to normal and it's warmer. So you get to keep all the heat, but the air itself gets replaced.
Yes.
Now, in my mind, the top half of my room was still normal air, but the carbon dioxide that I was exhaling was sinking down to the floor because carbon dioxide's heavier than oxygen. And I figured opening up my door would cause the CO2 to rush out into the larger space and the normal air to replace it. But that's not how gases work, Greg.
Yep.
Oxygen is lighter than carbon dioxide, and there is a little bit more oxygen at the top of the atmosphere than the bottom, but over the distance of a few yards, or slightly fewer meters, there is too much energy in gas for the difference in weight to settle. It would be like trying to separate muddy water while you're also shaking it.
Right, yes.
So all the CO2 that I exhale just mixes in with the rest of the air. So I don't have like thick carbon dioxide sitting on the bottom of my floor. Now, if I had a big carbon dioxide canister and it wasn't pre-mixed and then it leaked, that could disperse before like it would, but it would mix, but it may not mix as fast.
Okay.
So there you go. If you want a good night's sleep, stick your head out a window.
Dan, we are famous podcasters now. We've been doing this for a long time. People around the world love us. They contact us.
Yep. And you, me, and Scott Rogan. That's Scott Rogan? Joe Rogan.
Yes. That man that no one knows his name, that unknown Scott Rogan.
Yeah.
I think his name's Joe, but no one really knows or cares, actually. Like, they all know Greg and Dan.
Yeah.
They don't know Joe and or Scott Rogan. Rogan.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's been shown that having a relationship with people online, such as podcasters like Greg and Dan, Dan and Greg, or Scott Rogan, it's actually a really strong relationship. We've heard it before, parasocial relationships.
It's strong in one direction.
Strong in one direction, that's right. But
all, all of the listeners, everyone listening to this could just turn off now and I wouldn't give a damn.
Oh, that's not true. Don't listen to him, everyone. Don't listen to him. It's a total lie.
Actually, the Patreons, though, then all the cash that's coming into my coffers that I'm swimming in that's filling up my money bin.
Stop it. Stop speaking, Dan. Why are you making this weird? So in a recent study by the University of Essex, researchers have explored the emotional fulfillment provided by parasocial relationships, such as with online personalities such as Greg and Dan.
Ladies,
right here in my
and
notes.
Gentlemen.
Compared to traditional two-sided relationships, as what I call boring old relationships.
Old media.
Old media, that's right. Not like us young, fresh media who have to have slightly warmer rooms to sleep in for no apparent reason. Anyway, surprisingly, they found that parasocial ties could offer more emotional fulfillment than weak two-sided relationships like those with co-workers and or neighbours.
I've got a theory.
Mm. Oh,
it's
yes?
Because when you're in a parasocial relationship, all you do is listen, and that makes you a good friend.
Oh.
But in a one-on-one relationship, you're just thinking of what to say next.
Say next. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to.
Different relationship you're trying to do. You're trying to do
anyway. The other thing is, Dan, I need to. Sorry. Did you want to say something there?
No, I don't want to play this game at all.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were trying to say something. I apologize. I'm sorry. So
please continue on with what you were saying so that I might interject constantly.
Nothing's changed there then. Through three studies over 1,000 participants, the team in Essex discovered that many people felt that one-sided connections can meet their emotional needs, especially in moments of social rejection. However, the study confirmed that strong two-sided relationships, romantic partners or close friends, remain the most effective for emotional support. All right. So when they looked at people, they asked people about who did you have a parasocial relationship with? And they would say, like Scott Rogan or Greg and Dan or whatever. In times of trouble, would that person understand you? And they'd go, oh, absolutely. Greg and Dan would totally understand what's going through my life. And even by not contacting Greg and Dan, then they feel better because someone understands them because they have a strong parasocial relationship with them.
They should sign up to the Patreon account.
Stop it, Dan. Stop it. Stop turning us into a dirty capitalist thing.
I wonder if they're getting a good night's sleep. The way I get a good night's sleep is from having a good mattress. You know, you spend a third of your life listening to mattress ads on podcasts.
So, yes, it's not just nerds.
I'll have fun with your one-sided friendship, nerd.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll be your fucking chicks.
Or people who are lonely or people with no friends. No, this is actually lots of people of all walks of life, different ages. This works for anyone. Parasocial relationships. Why people get upset when actors die or famous people die.
Or when they get cancelled for doing something terrible.
Well, yeah, you feel weird about it as well. You're like, well, what did I do wrong? Well, nothing. You did nothing wrong. You just liked someone.
Why did I not step in with Scott Adams and try to cut him off before he went real crazy?
We went right off the deep end. That's true. All right. So enjoy your parasocial relationships.
Joe Adams? Scott Adams.
Joe Scott? I don't know. Scott Joeington? They're all the same person now. Yeah, so enjoy your parasocial relationships as part of psychological coping mechanisms because they will provide validation, support in time of need. Don't be weird about it. Like, don't go to their house, which is, you know, which we've given lots of information to over the years. Don't do that. That would be really bad.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that. But also understand that a good, strong two-way relationship, as such with a romantic partner or a friend, is probably better than a parasocial relationship. So try and do those ones. And if you can't do those ones, let Greg and Jan be your pals without ever knowing that they were your pals.
Yeah.
I like friendships where I don't have to do any work. That's great.
It's like being invited to a thing all the time, which gets cancelled all the time. Oh, the relief.
Not cancelled. I don't mean like you said a terrible thing about trans people or something. Not that sort of cancelled.
Apparently that can't happen to me. I'm
what? What?
Like all the stuff that I've said on this podcast, I've never been cancelled.
No.
But the episode ain't over yet.
Sort of flew in the face of what I would have thought. But, yeah, I think it makes sense of...
They're always there when you need them.
Yes.
And they're never there when you don't want them around. Maybe that's all we need. Maybe if all my friends had a pause button, like I'd have much stronger relationships where I'm just like, yeah, I'm done with this for the moment. Thank you. Click.
Yeah. What's really funny then is, coincidentally, the feed between us froze just for half a second when after you said the word click, you went click. And then started moving again. It was very weird.
Maybe I primed myself to freeze solid for a second.
I was trying to extrapolate this out. I wonder if this is the same as people who have good relationships with family members or people who are a long way away that you don't really contact a lot. So because you don't contact, you have a strong relationship with them, like a grandparent, let's say, but because you're not around them all the time, you can sort of think what they, oh, granny would be really nice to me and hug me and give me lots of kisses and go, oh, and so you love them deeply. When you go, they're like real racist and you're like, oh, gran. And then you sort of go, you know it, but it doesn't affect, it doesn't change how you sort of see them a lot.
Well, this is the story of Truly Madly Deeply with Alan Rickman and some other people. Because it's about someone losing their partner and how much they miss them. And then they come back as a ghost and they're like, shit, I hate having this person around. They're a pain in the ass. They invite all their ghost friends around to drink and smoke in my living room.
Right. Exactly what it's like. Exactly the same. There are no implications there of anything. But yeah, so parasocial relationships, big thumbs up. We're doing a service, Dan. A bloody service is what we are.
Yep. Yep. And what's our reward? The Patreon account can be found at smartenough.org. Click on the Patreon button. What do we know about redheads, Greg?
They're soulless monsters that look like human beings that actually are just flesh automatons that try and make you feel bad about looking human. But really, it would be just like switching off a toaster. You should feel no problems at all.
I don't think there's any evidence for that, Greg. What? I don't think so.
I've made a lot of terrible mistakes in my life.
They're easy to burn from the sun. True. You're not supposed to go at them with pitchforks and stuff.
No. Also, because pitchforks, they're surprisingly bendy and they get out of the way. They kind of, because they have no bones. They're just a series of inflatable bladders.
That's not true. Redheads have bones. They've got bones.
Oh, okay.
They digest milk like a champ.
Oh, yeah. The milk stolen from young mothers.
Young mother cows.
Oh, right.
Steal milk from cows.
Right, true. Fair enough.
Okay. They're often fetishized by podcasters. Again, they don't have a soul. You're right.
Yep. Don't have a soul.
Actually, you know what happens when you get a redhead who is also left-handed?
Oh.
That's how you get witches. That's where witches come from.
Yeah, well, I used to work with someone who was, everyone knows my joy of saying redheads are soulless monsters. And also left-handed people, sinister hand. And then I was spouting off at someone I knew, and then they went, who's a redhead? And then they went, you know that I'm left-handed. And I was like, oh. And it burns me up inside every time I look at you. And I realized I'd stepped too far because they didn't know me that well. This is like a work colleague. And you're like, oh, no. Oh, I've thought we were in a different place. And I had to really backpedal a lot and go, oh, this is a gag. Oh, I've made a terrible error.
Never backpedal. Always double down. That's the Dan Beeston way.
Just push through and go all the way around. That's, yeah.
Make I it didn't want so to- insane that it can't possibly be true.
I just didn't want them to report me to HSE, but maybe they should. That maybe it's the only thing that'll stop me.
It never stops me.
You work for yourself. So you don't.
Yeah, there's a reason for that.
Another form from HSE. I'm going to throw that in the bin.
Never been cancelled.
So is this just a fun story about how we can mock redheaded people? This is amazing.
No, I found out something new about them.
Oh.
Something I discovered recently, they can't feel pain. I mean, they can and often do feel cramps. Emotional pain.
Right.
That apparently happens a lot more than it should. Can't imagine who's creating
people
that.
People are really mean. People are really mean.
People are terrible.
They're awful.
Terrible Greg. They're terrible Greg. Terrible Greg. Yeah. Terrible Greg. But they feel less physical pain.
Oh.
In our skin, we have pigment-producing cells called melanocytes. And they have a receptor that sits on the skin and waits for a hormone called melanocortin. When that hormone turns up, it makes the melanocyte switch from producing yellow-red to brown-black. Oh. So in redheads, their receptor is very weak. Weak receptor response means those cells stay light-coloured. They stay yellow-red and they don't go black-brown. The melanocytes also produce propiomelanocortin. This mixes into other hormones that regulate the opioid receptors that inhibit the pain and the melanocortin 4 receptors that enhance the perception of it. You like opioids?
Well, yes, but you can't. Is there a way of extracting them from? Well, that means you can't extract them from redheads. Oh, there's more opioids in redheads.
Same
That's
amount
great.
Of opioids. They're just, there's fewer receptors.
Oh, okay, right, okay. We can create some sort of opioid farming of redheads and not feel bad about it because they don't have souls. They're not people. All their terrible cries for leniency are the same as the barking of a calf.
Terrible, it's Greg. Fine. Terrible, Greg.
Also, I don't eat meat, so, you know, it's fine.
In a fully functioning blonde or brunette...
fully functioning?
This balances the system and provides the regular amount of pain data.
Sure.
But in a non-functioning redhead, the lack of these mechanisms also cancels out and creates a normal response.
Oh, no.
But there is another mechanism in
a
the body.
A normal response. I love it. Yeah, so, not the abnormal response of the redhead,
no.
But a normal
Both
response.
Of them get a normal response, oh, a normal good, pain good. Response. Okay. It inhibits right. some pain, but it allows for some pain.
Got it.
In the redhead, it inhibits a tiny bit of pain and allows for a little tiny bit of pain, whereas... in a fully functioning blonde or brunette, large amount of pain, but inhibits a large amount of pain.
Aha.
Okay. But there's another mechanism in the body that blocks pain. It adds a tiny amount of opiate.
Is it the devil? Is it the devil in redheads? Is it the shield of the devil?
No, we're not talking about witching. This is
no pain
science
for you.
Podcast. We're not talking about witchery here.
Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize.
There's another mechanism in the body that blocks pain. It adds a tiny amount of opiate to the body that is diluted in the reservoir, the massive reservoir of the pain balance mechanism.
They hate being called reservoirs, by the way. You call a redhead a
reservoir. No, you're the reservoir. You've got the black-brown, so you've got an enormous reservoir of this sort of pain balancing stuff, and it adds a tiny amount extra.
Enormous reservoir, Dan.
Of
really
opiate.
Mean. Why you mean to
But me? A redhead, there isn't anything else interfering or balancing out the system. This mechanism of that little bit of extra opiate goes ham on the body and blocks all sorts of physical pain.
Goodness.
So they've done studies and redheads are more withstanding to physical pain than anyone else.
So what we need to do to defend the Smart Enough to Better comedy blimp is genetically engineer a super soldier army of redheads that would feel less pain. Well, probably have to give them a lot of sunscreen, give them big hats or something. Then also, we wouldn't have to worry when they were like mowed down in droves because they're not real people.
And how do you propose instilling any sense of loyalty for these millions of redheads?
This podcast to start
constantly
off with.
mock look, and but let's call it what it is, bully on the podcast.
I think that we just won't tell them that part. They'll just be dealing mainly with you.
I see.
The one who calls them fully abnormal and has fully functioning brunettes and blondes. So I'll handle the brunettes and blondes and you handle the redheads. Between us.
Never been cancelled. No.
It's sort of odd, the different sort of ways the human body can react to things and how it one change or little changes sort of lead to other changes that you don't realize are linked. In that case, like pain receptors and skin colors, and they're not connected technically. They've just developed together for some reason genetically.
Well, if you extrapolate in the other direction, it means people really dark skin are like real pussies.
Oh, no. Right. No. I can see your brain ticking.
Let's not extrapolate that.
No.
Let's not do that at all.
That's not. Yep. And explain why all those witch burnings I did took so bloody long. Just expire, will you? Stop just hanging out on the pyre. That's ridiculous.
I mean, they do burn really effectively.
They do.
They
burn quite well. Oh, dear. We like redhead people. You're just good people. I think that saved it. I think I managed to stave off the cancelling.
Yeah, I don't think that doesn't feel very sincere.
Oh, it's just sincere. After
8 minutes of just constant mockery and bullying, you're like, oh, yeah, we didn't. It's just a joke. It's just a joke, guys.
You're saying bullying. I'm saying it's just truth telling. That's all I'm saying.
Dear me. Terrible. Terrible, Greg.
I'm just following the rules that you stated, which were never backpedal.
Oh, so I'm responsible for this.
Oh, absolutely. As per usual.
Yep, fair enough.
All right. This is an astronomy story that I've kind of gone through quite a few thoughts on, and I wasn't even sure I was going to bring it up on the podcast. There was a story I saw over a week ago now, talking about how scientists discover Dyson spheres in space, potential what? Candidates.
Dyson, and I was like, that's enormous news.
Yeah,
incredible. Yeah. That's like, that's proof of life.
Yeah, I know.
That's proof that a culture can like get past like this ridiculous infighting part and work together and create something incredible. A Dyson sphere is like, and how have I not? And are we breaking it on this point? What an incredible coup!
I don't think so. It's a big survey that's been done of lots of different stars in our galaxy, and they're looking for stars that were not putting out a lot of visible light compared to the amount of infrared light they put out. Because if something's blocking the visible light but putting out heat instead, maybe it's a Dyson sphere. Maybe that's
because it blocks all of the
visible light.
But then whatever it's made out of absorbs that energy and then radiates it as heat.
Yes.
Rather than light.
Heat is light. Heat is, it's infrared light. But yes, I know.
Oh, let's not do this. Let's not, don't do this again.
So for those who don't know, a Dyson sphere is the idea of taking part, like a civilization reaches a point where they can, in their own solar system, they can take apart planets and they can make a ring of material around the sun, blocking the light from their star and absorbing it all. Because
a ring? A sphere?
A sphere around it.
I mean, a really tall ring that meets at the top and bottom.
A very wide ring that curves slightly at the top and bottom. That's right. And the idea is that you can absorb all the energy then, because on Earth there's about 1,000 watts per square meter, roughly. So that's a lot of energy that, you know, and you lose some, you have losses and things, but that's a lot of energy just like from the sun. So if you get closer as well, you can have a higher concentration of energy. And if you can absorb all that, then that's your energy levels of your civilization many times over. There's something like trillions. If you could absorb all the energy of the sun, 20 trillion times the annual energy consumption of humanity every second is being emitted from the sun. Thousands and billions and millions. It's a lot.
That's a lot.
And if you could absorb all of that, even if you had losses, you said, oh, we only captured 1% of it due to losses by putting a giant sea around it. Well, this is a lot of energy.
A lot of it's bounced back into space. If you're just bouncing it back into space and then capturing it again, then the whole place gets real bright and you just capture all of it. nothing bounces away or anything
No, nothing. That's right. All the photons. It's all. That's right. That's the whole idea. Now, this is really hard to do, of course. Like, the amount of material to build even a thin sphere that goes around the entire sun at a level that it wouldn't just melt and all the rest. It's not even close to possibility for us. It maybe never will be. But this is the idea of the Dyson sphere, named after Freeman Dyson. Now, with this research that's been done, they sort of found all these weird, and many, many, many of them, they found quite a few, like scores of these weirdly dimmed stars that have quite a high infrared amount of energy coming out of them. And one of the ideas, someone said, well, maybe it's a Dyson sphere. When I first heard this, I went, no, that's not a thing. This is just nonsense from second one. I wasn't even going to bring it up. And then I just happened to see it a few times and people were like, well, it could be. And more to the point, it wouldn't be a Dyson sphere. They're talking about what is called a Dyson swarm. Not a full sphere. They're actually just, imagine lots of satellites all around the sun absorbing energy from it. So you don't, because you don't need to capture every bit of light from it. So you just have these lots of spaceships in orbit around the sun. And the more the spaceships you put up there, more satellites absorbing, the more energy you have. And if you're a very technological civilization, you can get, even if you've got 1%, as I said, of the energy from the sun, that's going to run your civilization forever. Just no problem at all.
How do you get the energy from the satellite down to the planet?
Well, I guess you beam it.
How do you beam electricity?
You don't beam electricity. Well, now I can, Tesla people, you can. Well, no, not beam it. But
you can have something called a lightning bolt. That's kind of beaming electricity.
Yeah. It's more that you convert it into another light wave and you send it down and it gets collected on Earth. There's massive losses. You create electricity with a solar cell and then you create a beam, some sort of high energy beam, some sort of not gamma ray, but X-rays, something like that. And you fire X-rays down to a collector on Earth or collectors in space. You can transmit light, so wow. You can just transmit it that way. Now, you don't want to get in the way of that beam. That would be bad.
No.
But it can be done. They talk about beaming energy down from space, but there's losses, of course. You're going to have losses. But once again, we're talking about massive amounts of energy. It doesn't really matter. Let's have a long tether. Massive long tether. So these candidate Dyson swarms, people are like, well, could it be actually like a Dyson swarm? They're only, inverted commas, blocking 16% of the light in some of the cases.
That's so much, because suns are quite big generally, aren't they?
That's right. And they're punting out a lot of infrared. Other people then came out and went, well, as per usual, it's never aliens until, you know, it's aliens. And other scientists have come out and gone, look, before we jump to we've discovered Dyson swarms in multiple locations, 50 to 200 locations around our galaxy, let's talk about what it potentially else it could be.
Just big hot rock.
It's just going to be something blocking. So that's a very good point. So one is a hot debris disk. So these stars maybe are forming planets and they're surrounded in dust and gas, and their light, their visible light, is being blocked by the dust and gas, the protoplanetary disk.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, of course, absorbing that light and re-emitting it as infrared.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, we see the infrared. And that could be the answer for some of them. But some people like, some of these are very old stars, and it'd be very weird that they have a protoplanetary disk.
That these things haven't collapsed into a big old sphere, which the universe loves doing.
Exactly right, yes. Another one is these things are going to be blocked by dust and gas that interspersed between these things. Because you can't see the dust and gas. That's because, you know, it's dust and gas.
Mm.
If it just happens to be for those candidates of these stars, there's just something in the way, dust and gas. Remember we talked to Professor Peter Quinn about dark matter, and one of the ideas was dark matter maybe is just a lot of cold dust and gas in the universe. Mm. Now, it's not, and as you pointed out, it's not, but that was one of the ideas. So maybe this is just clouds of dust and gas just happen to be in the way of these certain stars. That could be it as well.
Yeah.
Possible, not impossible. What possible means. Also, maybe it's just planets have run into each other. So a rare event, rare on the scale, you know, if it's only a 1% chance of it happening, of planets running into each other and creating debris fields, then even if it's 1% chance of it happening, then when you have so many stars in the galaxy, hundreds of millions of stars, then it's going to happen.
But gosh, so that'd have to be created in so much debris.
or just debris in the right place. Yeah. It doesn't have to be. It's just debris between us. Remember, it's a little dot to us. All it has to be is
to cover,
the debris between.
To block out 16% of its surface, that's so much area.
But remember with Betelgeuse, remember when Betelgeuse, we got very excited on this podcast about Betelgeuse going to explode. We're like, yes,
Any day now.
And it dimmed considerably. It dimmed much more than 16%. It got, I'm going to top of my head, like 20%, 25%, something like that. And in the end, it was decided that it wasn't because it was about to explode. It was because it had coughed up a whole lot of material interjected between us and it.
Oh.
So it actually blocked. It was like, and like cold, in inverted commas, compared to the rest of it. And then it just blocked its own light. And then that dissipated or went into orbit. Well, obviously it's in orbit, but yes, it got out of the way, basically. We could see the star
again.
So it could be the same thing. The answer is, it's probably not aliens, what I'm trying to say here. To begin with, I was irritated by it. Oh, don't say aliens. Stop it. But saying Dyson spheres potentially allowed people to look at it and say, well, what could it be? And now it's let other people go, well, we need to look at these things and work out what it isn't. And other people will probably do PhDs and papers on it to work out. Well, we discovered this one was a planetary disk. This one was a dust gas cloud in the way. This one is a Dyson sphere. So keep a lookout for these things. But it's never aliens. I'm sorry, everyone. It's just not. Until it is, but it's not.
Even then, probably not.
Even then, probably not. We're so lonely.
You'd think that you'd spot aliens if they came down. They wouldn't look like us. They wouldn't feel pain like us. Yeah, you'd know aliens when you saw them.
You'd know aliens, that's right. I like the idea.
They wouldn't have adjusted to Earth's sun.
Yes, very good point. They wouldn't seek retribution for mocking this soulless. In fact, that I use the term soulless, but knowing full well that I don't think anyone has a soul, that souls aren't a thing. So when I say that the redheads are soulless, I'm kind of admitting the fact that everyone's soulless, so that's fine.
Oh, that's a nice little caveat, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a nice get out of jail.
Honestly, it is actually my reasoning. That is my honest use of that term.
And how about the word monster following the word soulless? How do you dig yourself out of that hole?
Well, look, I have to really look at their social media feeds. I have to have a dossier made up.
You may recall, Gregoire, that I bought myself a safety razor with cheap recyclable blades and that this makes me some sort of great eco-warrior.
Ah, you're a hero, Dan.
Yes, hero. Yes. Well, it also makes me a lot more bloody when I shave. I'm nicking myself more often, and if there's one thing you should know about me, it's that I'm a bleeder. In fact, have you ever been to a doctor and like had a procedure and they're like, oh, do you tend to bleed much? Do you ever have that question asked of you?
I don't know. I've never had I've had procedures, but I've never had anyone ask me how much I bleed.
I've had it for dental procedures, like that. My response used to be along the lines of, oh, yeah, I can bleed quite a bit. And I thought that was giving them the information. I was answering the question politely. And then at the end of these procedures, they would let go, all right, well, we'll see you again next week. Yeah, you did bleed a lot. And I'm like, I thought I made that clear at the beginning, and I obviously didn't. So now if anyone's like, do you bleed very much? My answer is yes. I bleed more than anyone you've ever cut before.
I could bleed for Australia.
I will fill this room.
A sanguine tide.
The reason you're asking the question is because of people like me. Right. I need my face to stop bleeding. I'm trying to shave.
Good plan.
And there is a product that makes this possible called a styptic pencil. It contains potassium aluminium sulfate, and this causes blood to clot. Blood has a very slight electrical charge. This charge means that blood bounces off each other and doesn't stick together, which is great. We want our blood to be freed up to carry oxygen around. When we introduce potassium aluminium sulfate, it overwhelms the charge of the blood cells and makes the blood cells want to stick together. This blocks up the capillaries and makes the blood stop flowing. Isn't that brilliant?
Sounds like magic to me.
What this means, Gregoire, is that if you can apply an electrical charge to blood, it will coagulate. Also, Gregoire, my safety razor is all steel and conducts a current.
Oh, no.
If I were to attach my razor to the mains, it would automatically clot blood as I cut myself.
True.
It would
true.
Be even yeah. safer than a safety razor.
Cauterizing as it goes.
The safetiest razor.
Oh. Is this a new product that we're creating?
Yes. It's the Smart Enough Know Better safetiest razor. It clots as it goes.
Does it have to be attached to mains power? Could we just have it like battery powered? Like, does it have to be mains? What's the
if you're a coward? Welcome to the Walk of Shame, where you, the listener, pick out where we've made a mistake and help us on the road to being knowledgeable.
Woohoo!
We had two listeners contact me, Gregoire, about this one particular thing.
Oh my goodness.
Noah was worried that he wasn't the first to contact me about this, and he was right. So no walk of shame for Noah. And the first person to contact me was Rick Lepoidovin. In episode 210, during the Walk of Shame, Greg mentions Pythagoras was killed by soldiers who shaded what he was working on.
Yes.
But Pythagoras was killed by a mob. They were chasing him after a nobleman requested entry to his brotherhood, and Pythagoras refused. As he fled the crowd, his path was blocked by a field of beans, which he wouldn't touch due to his beliefs, and he was killed.
Really?
Yeah. Something that he taught was that beans had the souls of the dead in them or something odd like that.
That's where all the redheads go.
You just won't. You're like a dog with a bone today. What Pythagoras should have done is play to his strengths and immediately square off to them.
Ah, very good. Ba-dum-tsh. Yeah.
Greg was probably thinking of Archimedes, who was killed by soldiers during the siege of Syracuse. His life was meant to have been spared, but when soldiers interrupted him, he told them to go away.
Yes. Oh, it's Archimedes. Okay, yeah. There you go. But I'll accept that.
If either tale is true.
Yes. I've actually heard that Pythagoras never actually existed, that he wasn't a person.
This could be the case too.
And that's not having a go at our Welcome Shame people. It was just one of those things that, like, there is a Pythagorean system of thought, and maybe Pythagoras was a gestalt group of stories hundreds of years after an event of different human beings all joined into Pythagoras.
Like Shakespeare or Elon Musk.
Yep. True. thank you for that, by the way. Archimedes. Thank you very much. That's a really cool one. I like that one. Thank you for explaining it to me.
There were lots of stories about how Pythagoras might have died too, so... Mm. It's all a bit hidden everyone by the has past.
Everyone has a good hypotenuse. I mean, hypothesis. No.
Boo. Gregoire, this is the best walk of shame we've ever received.
Oh, excellent.
This is serendipity at its finest.
Oh, yes.
You tried to ascertain whether a chick could survive a gosling... could survive inside a golden egg.
Yes.
Now, we had a bit of confusion here, so just to get us all on the same page, we're talking about the egg when it's outside the chicken and it's not a reptile egg.
Yes.
You can't turn a reptile egg because the reptile will drown. You must turn a chicken egg or it'll overheat.
Okay.
Okay, now Kat and her husband Ian contacted us. Kat heard you say that the offspring of, what is it, Ansuorum?
Ansuorum, yes, Ansuorum, the golden goose, yes.
Wouldn't need to breathe through its shell.
Yes.
And she referred to this as an egregious mistake, which might be the best egg-related pun ever. Why should we listen to her, Gregoire? Is she just some dimwit with a keyboard? Well, maybe. But she also has a master's degree in avian biology.
Oh, my goodness.
And an enormous amount of experience with eggs.
Where were you when I was writing this? Oh, Kat, you let me down.
There are pores on the surface of the egg that allow oxygen to transfer through to the shell into a network of blood vessels that line the inner membrane. So there's like this weird sort of membrane inside the shell of the egg. The oxygen goes through the shell and into the sac, and the sac attaches to the embryo by a little cord thing and transports oxygen into the bird and CO2 back out. It's like a reverse umbilical cord.
Mm.
So even if you don't consider that breathing, she says, when the bird gets big enough, the membrane starts to detach from the top of the shell and a little pocket of air exists there. The first thing the bird does as it readies to hatch is puncture that sac and take a gasp of air inside the egg.
Mm-hmm.
So it is breathing inside the egg.
That's where I've got my information wrong, by the way. I knew about that. I've got it all in my head backwards, but that's I knew about that air inside the eggshell. I just, yes, that's what I was aware of that, but I wasn't too sure when and how.
No.
Interesting. Okay, there you go.
Now, normal eggs are made with calcium carbonate and other trace amounts of carbonate. The way these molecules link together enable these pores to exist.
Mm-hmm.
She isn't sure how to replicate this mechanism with gold, and suggests that maybe someone who has a lot of knowledge about material science could help.
Mm-hmm.
And that she found very convenient because she's married to one.
Fantastic. Suddenly Ian enters the story.
We could not have had a better listener experience, Gregoire. This is perfect.
Amazing. This is brilliant. Ian, where were you when I was writing this?
There are ways to approach having a golden egg.
Ooh.
The least plausible is that the egg is fully made out of gold and somehow is capable of being constructed such that these micropores exist.
Mm-hmm.
Gold is a very stable metal atom and thus has a very compact lattice structure.
Oh, okay.
This means that a naturally occurring structure of gold would normally not possess the ability for forming these necessary micropores that get oxygen to the developing Anseorum chick.
Mm-hmm.
The egg would still need to be calcium carbonate, but with some form of organic metal deposition.
Mm-hmm.
Gold can be deposited onto the calcium carbonate egg and coated in gold. As long as the pores on the egg do not get obstructed, we will avoid suffocating the young goose. Now, this is kind of what you were proposing, I think.
Yes, yes. Lines, in my mind, the lines would build up over time. It's like it would be, I don't know if I said this very clearly, but it wouldn't just be, because evolutionary wise, you just have lines of gold deposited onto the calcium shell. So you have these weird lines, crazy fingers of gold over time, due to evolutionary pressures of maybe other Anseorum geese find it attractive or whatever the reason is, that more gold is deposited over time. So crazy lattice builds up. With taking this new information into account, I would say that there'd be an interesting point where there's too much gold, the chick doesn't develop, therefore it can't pass on its genes. So the ones that have enough lattice to be look gold enough, but still have the holes in between the lattice of gold would live and therefore pass on their genes. All right, good.
Now, Ian says you might have more luck making a golden egg out of gold carbonate.
Okay.
You need a chemical reaction of gold with carbon and oxygen. The resulting material could form the correct pores, but it is unstable and decomposes easily. There's probably not a lot of value in the resulting eggs.
Right.
So, fully golden eggs would result in dead magic goslings.
Mm-hmm.
Gold leaf eggs would require very specific circumstances to allow a healthy chick. And gold carbonate eggs might work better, but have little resale value.
And would they look gold, those?
I think it would be gold, but it wouldn't be super I don't think it would be shiny gold.
Well, it really doesn't have to be, by the way. So when you have a compound of different things, like calcium carbonate, well, think of it this way. Sodium chloride doesn't look like sodium nor chloride. It looks like crystals, salt crystals. So they don't have to look physically the same at all. So gold carbonate doesn't necessarily have to look like gold in any way, shape or form. I'm not saying it doesn't. I'm just saying it doesn't have to. In fact, it would be very weird to me that it did. But yeah, I don't know. I am not the material scientist.
If only there was one listening. So thank you, Kat and Ian. Speckled tacular work.
Oh, that's very good. The word does make me think that you've just talked about your groin that has a problem.
That's speckled testicular work.
Speckled tackle.
Speckled tackle.
If you're like a 1950s fisherman from England or something.
That's how you get
it. Old speckled tackle. That's not from England. That song wasn't. Oh, I'm going to stop speaking now.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to get bombed.
Once again, whoa! I was mocking redheads. I don't know what you're doing. You're on your own on that one.
Casting allusions to the Irish.
To the Troubles, yes. But that's, wow, okay, yeah. Probably don't put that
never
in.
Never getting cancelled.
Don't believe that in the podcast, please.
We're all the way on the other side of the planet. What can they do? Drive up on a motorcycle next to my car while I'm driving and shoot me in the head?
Going on? Why are we still speaking? Why are we doubling down on this? Stop it. Stop it.
I think you know.
Oh, no.
You have been listening to Dan at smartenough.org.
Also, Greg at smartenough.org.
Get along to the website where you can press all the buttons on the website if you want to subscribe or chat or send us money. All these things are available to you. If you would like to be one of our, if you would like to be a tier two member of our patronage device, then we will read your name out in thanks. So that's what's happening now. Thank you very much to Andrew Whitehurst, Lindsay Jenkinson, Matthew Toy, Mariana Scott, Ivan, Britta Rogoski, Andrew Potts, Avi Greenbury, Gronya Maguire, Andrew Trousdale, Liz Y, Matt Ewers, Ilana Mitchell, and Gary Heather. Thank you all so much for being tier two supporters of the podcast. Thank you very much to all the tier one supporters. Thank you. Even though we don't read out your names, I definitely read them and then delete them from the list for every single episode. So I always
We see them.
I always do a little thank you as I delete your names. There are also the tier three people. These people are overstimulated by the podcast.
And they, the power of capitalism.
And they have decided to support us with, quite frankly, far too much money.
That's true.
And for their sins, I will insult them.
Yeah.
Thank you, Greg, for setting that up for me. That's right.
You don't have to do it. You're the one to continue on. I feel like now I'm just being blamed for something that, you know.
That you did. Yeah.
Yes, but you continue on. I don't know. Who's the bigger monster here? I'm just saying.
Is it Dan or is it Greg?
I'm just asking questions, Dan.
Oh, yeah, that's never a problematic phrase. Just ask you the question.
I'm just asking a question. Come on, everyone.
Yeah, what happens if we do put them all in a camp? I'm just asking the question.
Wow, we jump straight to Nazi Germany. That's impressive. Well done.
What? No. I was talking about the Boy Scouts. What are you?
Oh, okay, right.
Okay, so Hades 2 came out, and I have spent every waking moment playing it. So these insults are based on witches.
Coincidentally.
Tom Seary, you are toil and trouble, but it's the bubble that really puts people off.
Mm.
And Steve Eichenhout, that's not how you're supposed to ride a broomstick.
Side saddle, Steve. Side saddle. I just said side saddle, but actually, I think that's the whole point. I think it's what upset people because all these women running around with a phallus between their legs, and everyone got upset. I think that's the reason. One of the reasons why it's like women not riding side saddle is what upset people as much as the flying broom thing. Even though they weren't flying the brooms because brooms don't fly. Am I gone crazy there? I have a memory of some sort of weird thing where it's like those women are astride a thing, and that destroys society, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a thing. In Bewitched, she's riding side saddle.
Ah, yes.
She's very lady-like.
She's a lady.
Because you're not supposed to have your two legs gripping onto, because that's a bit sort of, marital. Now, Greg, this section always is feeling a bit weird to me these days because I'm only insulting two people.
There's only two now because everyone gets pulled out. Everyone stopped. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Well, because some of them have, say I don't need to insult them anymore.
Indeed, yes.
But it kind of needs three people. It kind of needs a minimum of three, or because it's got that rule of threes thing. You've kind of got a boom, boom, boom.
Right.
So if someone else could subscribe to the top tier for idiots, that would be great.
Why don't we just pick a random person from the tier two and show them what it feels like?
Because then we get $15 less. What are you doing? Why?
Randomly. Then they go, I want that every time.
Oh, from the tier two, because that's how you get HR on your back. Where you get into the real trouble. That's how Dan gets cancelled. Don't insult people who haven't asked to be insulted.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
That's a lesson you could learn. Certainly not an entire...
Somehow this is my fault. I don't understand what's going on here.
Colour of head, an entire group of people. And a big thank you to my flying monkeys, Eric Wilson, Michael Barnes, Scott Driscoll, Morden O'Hare, Joey Wisley, and Al Batson. Thank you all so much for being tier three patrons of the podcast.
We do love them.
I don't think there's anything else we need to promote.
Look, just ourselves, Dan, as parasocial saviors of your emotional state, you're welcome. Share your friendship that you have with us, your parasocial friendship, with other people so we can have more parasocial friends. That'd be good.
Yeah, don't be greedy.
Don't Don't just join the patron friends to yourself.
Don't be greedy and join the patrons.
No.
Don't be greedy. Top tier guys.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
Don't be greedy.
Yeah, stop.
Give us your money.
What are you doing?
You're holding on to all your money? Give us your money.
No, stop speaking. Stop speaking. Stop it.
And delete all your other podcasts and only listen to us.
And then one day we'll send you an email about where the compound is and to only bring black pants, black shirts, black shoes, shave your head, and $100 of burial expenses.
Getting people to cut their hair off. What is it with you and judging people because of their hair? And as we always like to say,
don't be a redhead. Use Smart Enough to Do Better, the safetiest razor.
Good grief.
Redhead is, and you cut yourself. It's bleeding. That's the sort of redhead.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, ow, cut myself. I'm a redhead. Oh, that's the safetiest razor.
Yeah, oh, nothing face. To do with the other stuff. Thank
no, goodness. No, okay, no. What are you talking about? No, it's fine. Why are we adventuring together? Like, who are you people and why would I hang around you? There's got to be a reason to be together. You can't.
I guess that's the story grows from.
Yes.
This is the Breakfast Club. It's the Breakfast Club, but with dice. All right. We are recording. That's good.
You certainly are. Nothing anyone can do about it.
I mean, I could just hit this big square. There's something I could do about it.
You're not a person.
What? But I'm the person.
You're the person.
I'm the person.
You're the main character of the universe.
Yeah.
No NPCs for Dan. Well, I blame you for a lot of this. This is all your fault. Damn it, Dan.
This is disappointing to hear. The king has a mission for you.
Oh, right. There's
a Nazgul in the basement. Okay. Perform a face. Welcome. Ooh, too loud. Too close. Too loud. Too close and too loud.
Welcome to. Kelvin, not Kelvin's.
Kelvin.
Not
Kelvin. That, no. We established this last week, last episode.
Well, wait to the walk of shame.
No, I mean, maybe you should wait for the walk of shame. I'm going to keep using the science that I learned last week.
It's not right. It's absolutely not right. But anyway, that's okay.
Well, don't blow the walk of shame. That's what it was on Wikipedia.
Oh.
I don't know where I found it, actually. Anyway.
ChatGPT? It's ChatGPT, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's where I get all my content for the podcast. It's ChatGPT. No more reliable source of information than the farting cat.
This is something, this is a bit of a side tangent here. I know it's probably going to the podcast, but this is something even I'm quite pro AI. I am. I admit it. Like, yes, there are lots of problems, but I'm actually like, what an exciting tool. And I admit that. But even I was like, when Google came out going, hey, guess what, everyone? We'll do the Googling for you very soon. It's all going to be AI Googling. We're going to change Googling. It's googly, googly, googly. And I went, it's not accurate. It's never accurate. What are you talking about, Google? You friggin' idiots. It's not. It's the thing I tell everyone is don't use it as a goddamn search tool. It's crap at it. It doesn't do it well. Google's like, hey, everyone, let's Google with the AI. I'm like, what are you? That's not how it works.
Apparently, anyway. Down at Google, like, they're real into panicking about new technology. Like, this all happened with Facebook. Facebook came along and they were like, shit, we've got to make Google wave. And look how that went for them.
But that's not gonna. But Google Wave just didn't. That just didn't work. They're going to piss on their own. They're going to kill the golden goose. Because at the moment, people use Google and it's annoying, and they're making it worse. But it works. They're now going to have a shit version that doesn't work. And what's the point? Even I'm like, that's not what you use AI for. Mm-hmm. That's not you, friggin' idiots. You what? I don't even know. I don't even know who the head of Google is, but they need to be slapped because it's such a stupid idea. Unless they've got, like, we've solved the problem, but they didn't say that. Anyway, sorry, just boom.
Yeah, Google is ruined. There are other search engines, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, there are, but they don't work as well, unfortunately. Just, even though, so annoying.
Kaji's all right.
Which one?
Kaji. K-A-G-I. It works.
The problem with not using Google, it's a bit of a feedback loop, is because Google has been used so much, Google works really well to find the things that are linked, the whole ranking things, because more times you use Google, the better it becomes at ranking things.
Also, this whole industry is about playing Google and trying to beat Google's things.
Yes.
And so once you've got too much of that, you're doomed.
Yeah. They will never do it, but I like the idea in Doctor Who having a historical companion and it being Christopher Marlowe traveling with the Doctor and no one knowing who Christopher Marlowe is and him getting really upset by it. Like, hello, I'm Christopher Marlowe. Oh, that's nice. For f***'s sake. It's like, I wrote bloody Shakespeare. Sure you did. No, I don't think he did write Shakespeare. I'm going to say that in The Walk of Shame, I don't think Christopher Marlowe wrote Shakespeare, but I just like that idea of, even if he didn't in the story, just have people not knowing who Christopher Marlowe is would really upset him. The Doctor, come on, Marlowe. Ah, bloody hell. Yep.
Wasn't there already a companion called Marlowe?
Is there?
Talo? Boro?
Oh, yes. Yes, he's that horrible redheaded kid.
Oh, my God. I did not mean to lure you back to the well.
Turlo.
Turlo.
Is he redheaded? He's very pale, but he's British. So maybe he's just pale. I can't remember.
Strawberry blonde, maybe.
Yeah, he might be, yeah.